Hi, everybody. My name is Justin. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if I can really live up to that, but I'll try. I wish I could be funny like Lindsay. I'm really not. Thanks, Amanda. It's awesome to see you celebrating. She got sober a couple weeks ahead of me. And, wow, I'm nervous. No matter how many times I speak, I get real nervous. Like, past 3 days in my head, like, I was doing awesome speaking. You know, I was like, people were standing ovation. People were chanting. Like, I was going to be president of AA. And I get up here and I'm like, hi, I'm Justin. Somewhere in between there is reality. And it's just kind of my story, you know, like never in the moment. And, you know, that's why I consider myself an alcoholic, that and many other reasons. But my sobriety date is February 14th, 2009. I have a sponsor. I sponsor others. And wow, I'm nervous. If I wet myself or my teeth start chattering, don't mind. But I had a great opportunity to work some steps with a guy today and, hear a great story and a message from others today. And, it gives me a great outlook about my own sobriety and what I have to do today to stay sober today. I grew up in a middle-class environment, like an Irish Catholic family in upstate New York. Up until the age of 15, I was a pretty typical kid. I found liquor and very quickly... I found a solution for that lawnmower noise in my mind, you know, that Lindsay was talking about, the hamster wheel, you know. It's very unlike a hamster wheel for me. You know, I'm really self-centered, so it's loud, it's deafening, and it blocks me off from everything. You know, it's like me, I kind of relate it to me sitting, you know, serenely looking out the window on a Sunday morning thinking about the birds and how nice it is, and then somebody right outside the window starting a lawnmower, and it's just like, wah! And it drowns everything out. I mean, it just, it blocks me off from everything. You know, that's kind of how it is. And she mentioned some stuff about school. I had some problems in school shortly after I found the drink solution to that noise, you know, because the drink worked. As soon as I had a drink or two, you know, I could lean back on the curb or the roll of carpet in the garage or the rusty old car or wherever it was that I was partying, and I was cool. I was fine. And, it reminded me of sitting in calculus, you know, in chemistry and math in high school. You know, I always went to prep schools. My family did the best they could for me. You know, I had every opportunity available to a young man in the United States. But, something happened. You know, I would be sitting in class. It'd be like 8:45, 15 minutes in, first class. You know, one voice on one head, side of the head was like, you know, you got to do this. You got to stay the whole time today. You got to do it. You know, we're going to do this. We're going to graduate on time with everybody else. Like, the other side of my head would be like, ah, get the hell out. Get wasted. And be like, got to go. You know, bathroom pass, please, I'm out. And that's kind of how it was. You know, I got kicked out of my first school. It was a prep school. My mom had recently got a divorce. So she was broke. But yet, you know, she still afforded the $5,500 a year to send me to this prep school. She's an angel. And I blew it. You know, I got kicked out. They found 5 pounds of weed and a pistol in my locker, 15 years old. I don't like to talk a lot about the drunk log and what happened, but I think we need to so people that are new, like Sarah in the room, can relate, you know, because we've all been through similar situations. But, handcuffs and being arrested go hand in hand with my drinking, no matter what age I'm at, no matter how long I've been sober, you know, white-knuckling it in between, because I did a lot of that. 17 years of drinking, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to control it. And, nothing worked. You know, it was just a series of, like, I'm going to clean my stuff up, and then I'm going to get arrested. You know what I mean? I had no trouble with the law until my first arrest. They didn't arrest me that day at that school. I got kicked out. They were Catholic priests, so they worked it out with my family, told me I had to leave. Went to another school, public school. I was off the chain. Within, I think, 6 weeks, I was arrested for the first time for stealing a purse. And I got $250 out of it. I got completely wasted. And as soon as I'm wasted, I'm good to go back to school. So I always go right back. Because, I mean, I have no social life. All I care about is drinking. So I spent, like, $45 on beer. And I drank it, and I went back to school, and they arrested me, you know, drunk, disorderly, with all of her money and credit cards in my pocket. I've never been a good criminal. I cleaned myself up for a little while, and the next arrest, I was drunk. I threw a rock through a school window, and we went in and we defaced the property, stole some stuff and left. Cleaned it up for a little while longer, and then I got arrested for going back to the prep school drunk, and I kindly drew a swastika on the whole football field before homecoming, and they didn't like that too much. So, like, the point I'm getting at is there's, like, a series of me trying to get my stuff together, honestly trying to avoid these circumstances, and then just dragging it all down because I don't know what else to do. The only thing I know that works is that booze quiets that noise in my head, and I can somewhat function upstairs. Regardless of what I do on the outside, I'm okay. Am I lips sticking to my teeth? I feel like... you know, that's kind of what happens, you know, and it went on like that for 17 years. And, you know, some of the other fellows in the room, they caught a hold of this story, and one of them suggested I share it. I'm going to read it to you, which I usually don't do. I'd love to tell it from my heart, but I don't remember any of it. The point I'm trying to make is there was 17 years of that stuff in between this story. And slowly, you know, as a 31-year-old man, I ended up transformed by my actions in alcoholism and selfishness from this Catholic prep school kid that went to church every week to this guy. And it's in the St. Pete Times. It says, Justin Callahan sat handcuffed in the back of a police cruiser Monday night on the way to jail. Newport Richey police said he then made these statements. First, Callahan asked the uniform officer who had just arrested him what he did for a living. Bear with me. Second, Callahan told the officer he thought he was in Rochester, New York. Third, Callahan started singing, I Built This City. It's funny now. Police don't have any breathalyzer results or field sobriety tests to indicate whether Callahan was intoxicated. He refused both tests. But what police do have, they say, is a pattern of bizarre and dangerous behavior Callahan is accused of that night on U.S. 19. It started when a witness reported a road rage incident about 9:46 p.m. It was Callahan driving a black Ford truck who cut motorists off and gave him the finger. Callahan cut off and chased a white van, police say, and tried to ram several witness vehicles. When police pulled over Callahan and asked him how much he had been drinking, he refused to say, saying, only you figure it out. According to a police report, the officer said he found an open bottle of Wild Turkey bourbon in the cup holder. It's funny now, but, you know, for a grown... Oh, thank you. They were sticking, weren't they? For a grown man with that much opportunity in his life to end up like that is a very pitiful story. I tried to fix myself once again and went on for a year after that. I later caught a charge for a strong-armed robbery and kidnapping and faced 30 years to life. And that was not me. You know, like, I'm terrified of the law. You know, I haven't got a single ticket since I got sober. I'm typically pretty well-behaved. But when I put alcohol in my body, something happens. I transform into somebody totally different, and I have absolutely zero control. And that's why I'm an alcoholic. Like Lindsay said, you know, one drink, one drop, something happens, it transforms me, it sets off a series of events that put my life out of control and a lot of people in danger. And, you know, the saddest part about this story right here was that morning, I have no idea why I even went to Newport Richey. I didn't know anybody up there. I had no idea where I was. But my baby sister was going to take her first flight out of Rochester, New York to come visit her older brother the night before. She landed in Tampa, and I was nowhere to be found. She had to track me down, figure out how to bail me out, and that was her arrival. You know, that's what I do. I bring other people with me. And, you know, the beautiful part about it is something magical happens in these rooms, and... after the first meeting I went to, regardless of what I thought about the people that were in it, I heard something that kept me coming back. And I saw recovery in you guys. You know, because up until then, like, the series of events and decisions I made in my life forced me into a position where I had nowhere else to go. And when I showed up here, you guys demonstrating, you know, that one, you've been where I've been, and two, you aren't there anymore, you know, kept me coming back long enough to, you know, get in touch with God and put some of this stuff in order. But, you know, I was thinking about it earlier today. You know, it only seems magical to me, you know, and to us, you know, if you admit you're an alcoholic. You know, I mean, if you talk about those things with an average Joe, you know, that's got his life put together. I mean, getting in touch with God, you know, figuring out where you're wrong and fixing it. Come on. I mean, you know what I mean? Helping others. I mean, that's how they live. For me, it's like, man, this is some crazy shit. The hell am I going to do? You know? You know, and I gotta take this long, hard look at myself and follow these guys around and listen to their hocus pocus, you know, and try to believe. You know, and that was the toughest thing for me, because I'm skeptical and I think I'm smart and I think I know the right way. And the first year of my sobriety was hell because of it. Because, like, I had nothing to go on other than the fact that you guys were going to take me someplace I needed to go. You know, and I didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? But I knew what the alternative was. It was stuff like that. And, you know, that last charge that I took, you know, I can say that I didn't do, but I certainly made a bunch of decisions that led me up into that situation that created the problem to begin with. And that's how all of my problems are now. You know, I can see, thanks to this program, that my motives, actions, and responsibilities, whether I choose to follow them or not, you know, my problems all arise out of that process of the selfishness that I make decisions with. And the only thing I can do to get rid of it is stuff like this, stuff that dries my lips out and sticks into my teeth. Stuff that makes me really uncomfortable. But I do it because my life today is amazing. You know, you guys have shown me how to live again. You know what I mean? You've shown me how to face fear, how to trust in God, how to clean house, how to act responsibly. Lindsay said pay bills. That's a big one. You know, it's amazing when I look back at the last 4 years. You know, I haven't got a single ticket. You know, I haven't paid a single overdraft fee on my checking account. Haven't switched banks. Haven't bailed myself out. Haven't had to sell a vehicle because I couldn't pay, you know, lawyers. It's just been a lot easier than the alternative. You know, the alternative for me sucked, and that's how it happened every time. And, you know, throughout 17 years of trying to fix your life, by the end of it, you know, I got pretty convinced that no matter what scheme I concocted next, with any given period of time, I was going to end up smack dab where I left off, because that's what historically happened. And, you guys have offered me a way out. You know, now, like Clark, you know, when I'm asked to speak, I speak. You know, when sponsees call, I try to answer the phone. I try to be there where I say I'm going to be. I try to pay my bills. And some of those things I fail miserably at. But, you know, the determination to stay sober and God's guidance have kept me sober this long. You know, all I know is what I've been shown, and that's what I do today. The steps have really been just a way for me to get a life worth living, because I, like Lindsay, ended up at the end there like, shit, I'm going to just kill myself. You know, that always seemed like an easy out when I was growing up. But I never seriously considered it until I woke up that one last morning and I was like, damn, man, I can't do this anymore. This is just like too much. Like, I don't want it. I just don't want to do it, you know. And luckily, you know, several years prior, a good family member or a close family member had given me a book that I never opened. I opened it up that evening and I started reading it, and I identified, which is really important, you know, that we can go somewhere, even if it's the book, like the old days. It transmitted the message through the mail. You know, the book was the place I needed to go to identify. And I opened it up, and 36 pages later, I understood what my problem was for the first time. You know, my problem resides in me, and the alcohol was nothing but an elixir. It was a solution that worked for a long time. But if you look at my life on paper, it's plain to see that the solution that I had chosen, started to become part of the problem. And things just went exponentially downhill from there. You know, they just spiraled. But I've trusted in you guys, and you've shown me that what you've told me so far has been true. You know, life has gotten much easier. It's gotten much more productive. You know, I don't ever say I'm bored anymore. And that was a big deal for me. Like, it's always like, man, if I'm not, like, getting stoned and drunk in a car, what the hell am I going to do? You know? And you've shown me that there's plenty of things I can do that keep me occupied that don't have to destroy my life and others, you know? Like, and I've been living the dream lately. It really feels like that. You know, sure, I could probably use some more money, you know, because for some reason the disease of more penetrates me terribly. Like, it's always more and more and more. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I've been getting degrees lately. You know, I've been holding down jobs. There's guys that they call me up when they're having a tough day and they expect to hear the truth from me. And that's a big part of it. You know, I really enjoy that. And, you know, sometimes I think to myself, like, damn, if they only knew, you know what I mean? But it seems like the phone rings always at the perfect time. And it's just been a crazy ride, you know. I look forward to more years of this, day at a time. You know, recently been married, and the relationship is going well, which has always been a big red flag for me. Like Lindsay, you know, 2 weeks later I'm moved in, and there's stuff flying around, and there's holes in the doors, and it's just a mess. But you guys have shown me how to, like, form relationships, lasting relationships, and it's all resulted from, you know, doing the steps, cleaning house, trusting God, and helping others. I'll keep a little short tonight, but really, thank you very much for having me speak. I'm glad to do it, and have a great night.